And I says, no, you don't have that contract, because I knew nobody had a contract. So he called up his organization down here in Anchorage from Prudhoe, and he said, oh, I see. And he hung up and he says, no, you're right, we don't have a contract. I haven't had one in a while.
Well, so the point is that some of them trucks up there, they just only have the little grader blades on the front end of pickups beyond Dietrich.
Yeah, you get from Prudhoe Bay down, it's not too shabby, because the oil companies take care of pretty much of that, because they want that halfway decent in there. So it isn't that shabby. But from there down, God almighty, there's nothing running on it.
My understanding is until June, they had a contract left.
You're right.
Native. All right, now, I guess my...
June 30th.
Yeah, I guess my comment is, if, you know, when the state lets a contract, they don't let their responsibility. I mean, you see that the contractor has the equipment and can do the job. You know, I think it'd be worthwhile to see what the contract consisted of, what they were supposed to be doing, how much money was involved in it, and so forth. Because if indeed the state is letting contracts, you know, then it is their responsibility to see that the contractor is doing the job.
Well, now, they did let the contract, and during the time that they had the contract, the road was kept up as good as they possibly could. There were stockpiles of gravel. There was a lot of gravel around, and they were using the gravel. But hell, if you're going to lose a contract, and you know you're going to lose a contract, you're not going out there and crush a whole bunch of gravel. You're just going to kind of peter this thing off a little bit. Because they knew they were going to lose it on the 30th of June. They knew that the state was coming in and accepting the maintenance of that road on July the 2nd. So what really happened was, as these guys were coming off the curve, God, the state never picked up the curve. They never got caught up with it. They knew, that's my point. They knew they were going to drop those contracts. So instead of gearing up for it so that they could pick it up and maintain it as the way it was, they went to hell. That road went to hell in 60 days, 30 days, 45 days. It went totally to hell.
Why did they lose their contract?
Because the state decided...
The maintenance.
Yeah, but why?
Because the state was going to take it over. That's the only thing I could. The Department of Transportation said we're going to take it over.
Talking about taking over the maintenance, I'll give you a good example of how asinine some of this business is. I've been up on the Taylor Highway, by George, in May, and here's a guy over there with a pickup truck full of gravel trying to fill a damn pothole, and I just come by a damn big front-end loader and a grader and a cat and everything down the way, and I ask him, I says, what the hell, how come you ain't using it? Well, we don't have the money to operate it on. This is 30 days before the end of the year, the fiscal year. This is happening throughout the state.
That's
and
right.
This may be one of the things you're talking about here.
That's right.
They quit maintaining it. They got the equipment to do it. They don't use it. 30 days. And this has happened, I know, 3 damn years in a row.
Now, they're taking gravel. You can you be driving along, you'll see, and all of a sudden you look up at the top of this, so help me God, it's a mountain. It is a mountain. And you see a road running up through it, and you see this bare spot up there. You can't quite make it out, but you know damn well what it is. It's a gravel pit, if you want to call it gravel. It's pit run is what we call pit run or river run crap, coming off the top of the mountain. Remember now, all that stuff was under glaciers at one time. So all that rock is round. It's been washed and built and washed and built, and you know. So what happens is they're driving, my God, they're driving up this damn mountain up there, and they're taking this stuff out of there, hauling it back down and putting it on the road. I mean, they're not crushing it. They're not stockpiling it. They're just running back and forth. Just, why, God, that's like...
Yeah,
well, we you can... You know my statement when I said
right.
Whittling in the Yukon River
right.
to raise the level of the water.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
We can talk about mechanics and that sort of thing. I think what we need to ask ourselves primarily is to come up with some recommendations for a more efficient operation, see how things are going, and so on and so forth. Chris?
Madam Chairman, maybe to help strengthen your case a little bit, I'm in contact with both Sealand, Tote, Linden, the oil companies, and are aware of their future plans and the amount of tonnage they're going to be putting over this road in the next 5 to 10 years, and it is incredible. You're talking about a doubling and tripling of the activity, just the commercial activity and the commercial tonnage that's going to be, that the state's going to be asked to maintain over that road. questionable. The Yukon has quite a bit of experience in maintaining heavily traveled commercial roads with very limited populations. And one of the concepts they've used very well is to station families every 30 miles. The wife holds the go slow sign, the husband is responsible for 30 miles, and that family approach, it works very well in Canada for their long distance travel on the roads. They're supplied on a regular basis, and they've got their system up to speed. It might be worth contacting the government and get some tips on how they do it successfully. Third of all, the upkeep problem that Representative Booth brought up, being that the state knew for a long time that they were going to be asked to take over the upkeep of the highway, and in fact did not plan for it. In fact, they waited until they took over and then start planning, then start caring. I might suggest that could happen in other situations where the state is going to be asked to come on stream and pick up a transportation problem. And without any future planning, without any kind of catching up or planning ahead of time as to what this transition actually means. And if they start from scratch when it happens, it's going to be too late, as we've seen here.
Exactly.
Just one other point I want to bring out that's an important factor in this whole thing. At Disaster Creek, where they have the checkpoint, they've got that's the checkpoint at Disaster Creek. It's a building, probably 20 feet long. And there's a gal sits there, and they rotate these people. You can see where she's living, and it's a little trailer sitting off on the side of the road. Conditions are not that good, of course. Yeah. And but she's there, and she keeps track of. When they come in, they hand their logs and their load and their weights and their whole ball of wax, hand it to her, and she logs it. So I got kind of interested in that while we were waiting there. So I asked her to see what, I wanted to know what happened the month of July. Now this was the 24th of July or 25th or 26th of July, somewhere. So it took up 90% of the month as to what the traffic was. So it's a daily deal. How many trucks went up? How many trucks went back? Were they heavies? Were they very heavies? Were they lights? Lights being a pickup truck, lights being a camper or whatever the hell it is. They can't go any farther than that, as far as that goes. But the people that have a need for going up there. The rest are heavies. 90% were the heavies, being 18-wheelers. And it ran through that month, and July was a very light month, very light, comparative to the, I wanted to get the records for the past, since January, we'll say, just to compare them. But at that point in time, we were 4,500 vehicles had gone over that road, and it was a light one. Now, that doesn't say they went up. It was going back and forth. That's what it was, going up and coming down. And it was extremely light. So they'll run over 5,000 per month, over 5,000 heavies per month.
I got a question. Mitch, do you know where the weight scales are coming out of Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Where are they located?
Whew. Boy, now let me think now. They are
before the dock
about, before they hit the, it's almost to where the pavement ends, back up farther.
At Fox?
I think it's
or
at Fox.
Or is it actually on the Elliott? Because I'm trying to remember where in the hell I've seen a scale at for anything north of Fairbanks.
Oh yeah, you got a scale north of Fairbanks. That's where they get their papers from. Because when we rode out, God, I can't remember exactly where that was, but it's between Fairbanks and where the road, we weren't too far into the dirt road. And we had to pull into the scale and hand the papers and they weigh it and they do all this kind of stuff.
The paved highway goes up to Elliott there, maybe a 25 mile.
Yeah. Well, it's after that.
Shall we prepare to go downstairs for that conference?
Oh, yeah.
A telephone conference. I do hope you have your questions written out.
I've got one question, and I think it's foremost in everybody's mind.
I think so, too. I don't have anything written out either.
Take this down?
Yes, very definitely. Yes, I would like you to come in. I have with me Representative Pappy Moss, Representative Abood, and our reason for calling was to talk about the scheduling of the ferries as far as the school systems are concerned.
Uh-huh.
And we have some questions we'd like to pose to you, and we'd like to have some of your responses, and also some of your opinions.
I've got Doug. He was just here a minute ago. He's got the schedule, so to give you the exact scheduling, just hold on just a minute, if you would, Betty.
Okay, Jim, fine.
He's just down the next office right now. Hold on.
All right. I forget that you can just talk on these. This way I keep thinking I've got to lean forward.
That works real well. I guess you can cut off this orange button, and then it doesn't broadcast down, but you can still hear them when they come back.
What do you mean it doesn't broadcast down?
They can't hear us.
Oh.
We can confer. You can't hear what they're saying.
Yeah, I've got Doug now on the other phone here. So go ahead, Betty. This is Betty Cato, Doug. Pappy Moss is there. Who is the other?
Representative Abood, the vice chairman of the House Transportation Committee.
Okay.
I'd like to start off by, I think I'll start out with, in concern, Doug, to the letter you received from Chuck Taylor.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Having to do with the ferry schedule, which has been going on for multiple years as far as the Bartlett is concerned. And I think I'll let Pappy start with the questions that he has, if that's all right with you.
Jim, one of the questions I had is it's my understanding that you're going to go in dry dock in October this year with a Bartlett rather than spring, as it's been doing. What's the particular reason for that this year all of a sudden?
Well, it was last year the same way, Pappy, and then in 1970, and 79, I believe it was also prior to the first of the year that we had a dry dock. It seemed to work out last year. I realized it had some repercussions on the school system, but in the other hand, to take it out later, it had we had some real problems as far as gearing up for the spring fishing, gearing up for the cannery workers, and the freight problem when all that would be servicing the Cordova Valdez area would be the Tustamina on once a week basis. And this is, it was last year, it was early, and 2 years previously, it was earlier than that. And like I say, except for the schools, it seemed to work out pretty well for everybody concerned as far as trying to maintain a service in there. We have to first start with the Tustamina, because when the Tustamina goes out, of course, Cordova and Homer and Saldovia and some of those areas up there are totally without service whatsoever. And so we've been trying to lay the good time on a Tustamina from the first of the year on through as long as it takes to get that ready. It also eliminates the possibility of the most severe weather that the Tustamina would have to handle during that period of time. It's getting to be an old ship, and every year we have more and more work on it. So we start with that, kind of with that schedule, and pull that out at the best time. And then try to work the best time in for the Bartlett to come out, because we try to keep one when the Bartlett's out, Bowman Valley does get once a week service when they, and then of course, if the Bartlett's in, you get your regular winter service over there, but then Kodiak and those areas get no service because the Bartlett can't run in those waters.
Jim, what is the latest date that it would still be feasible to pull the Bartlett out to go to dry dock that wouldn't interfere too much with the spring schedules?
Yeah, well, here, that's where Doug's got, I think, the schedule that it that he's got. Doug, have you got that schedule when it's due to leave port over for the...
Right, yes. Right now, the Testamina was scheduled to go leave Seward on January 2nd for 2 months. So the choice then is either to take the Bartlett off late October through, you know, December, or to switch it back March, April, and maybe into May. So right now, the way it stands, it would leave Cordova on October 24th to go to Seattle, and then it would return on January 3rd. It would be back in Cordova on January 3rd, which is a Sunday, so it'd be available then to go on the weekday service beginning the 4th or 5th.
In other words, we wouldn't have a schedule for the Bartlett between, I'm looking at a schedule here that Chuck Taylor has given us on his school operation. You see, not only Cordova and Valdez schools are involved, but we got a number of other schools that are involved in it from the interior and practically throughout the state for that matter. So that means that the scheduling that they have for their school programs between October the 30th and did you say January the 3rd it would return?
October 24th and January 3rd.
October 24th. Okay, but I'm looking at a schedule here. Their October 18th schedule could remain the same, but then they would have to do something about their schedule until January the 8th is the next one that I see. You said January 3rd it would return to the schedule?
January 3rd, right. It'll be back up at Cordova on the 3rd.
Well, let me ask you one question here. Just what do we need? Another open sea ferry, a high sea ferry? Is that what we're needing?
You mean for a year so that there is no disruption whatsoever in service?
Yes.
Well, of course, with Cordova and Valdez, even with the Testamina, there is limited service into Valdez and Cordova once a week. And even when the Bartlett is off, there is once a week service in there.
Well, Jim, what I'm thinking about is I'm starting to look at the islands out there, Kodiak and on out the Aleutians. I'm looking at it from an agricultural standpoint also. We're looking at cattle and grain and a few other things. And you say the Tuscumina is getting to be a pretty old ship anyway. And I'm just wondering if we shouldn't start addressing the possibility of a new high seas ferry to supplement or to aid in that marine highway system, because we've got one hell of a marine highway system up here in this area, and most people are just talking about the southeastern marine highway system. And I think that as things develop, we're going to need more equipment on the marine highway system for Cordova West.
We've got another vessel scheduled. Matter of fact, I think it's going out for the architectural contracts now for a vessel to take the place of the Testamina. And once that vessel comes online, then we're going to have to survey the Testamina to see just what kind of service and what waters it can run in. But we have got a new vessel scheduled for the replacement of the Testamina.
What's the time frame on that, Jim?
You're going to have to figure a year on the design of the vessel. We've had the studies done and pretty well know the type vessel we need. And so we're looking at possibly at least up to a year in the design of that. And then we have to schedule a minimum of a year to a year and a half for construction.
Okay, I want to step back a minute. I think Mitch has got something he'd like to ask here.
Yeah.
We'd like to get back to the crux of talking about the actual schedule and see if we can arrive at some type of difference, Jim. And Mitch would like to ask a couple of questions.
I take it that if on the 24th of October the Bartlett will go out and be back on January the 3rd, and then I presume now, maybe I'm wrong, that the Testamina then will be coming into effect on January the or on October the 24th on a limited basis. Is that correct?
It'd be coming in there, and it's I believe it's one trip a week as it comes in there.
Now then, what would be the what would be the problems if we increase that service to fill in on that instead of once a week? We pick up the service at the Bartlett, or to accommodate these schedules here for those kids throughout the state.
Well, I don't think Doug can better answer that, but I don't believe we have sufficient time on the Tustamino when it's servicing over there and then also servicing Cordova, I mean servicing Homer, Saldovia, Kodiak, and Seward. I don't think that we'd have, you know, even to try to schedule two trips a week in there. I don't, Doug, could you answer that a little? You've got the scheduling there.
Yeah, right now, for the Tustamino to cover the Seward, Kodiak, that side, it leaves on a Monday morning, and it's back in Seward then Thursday night. Which means, and then it leaves on Thursday night, so that it and goes over to Cordova, so they could be there on Friday, because the freight haulers into Cordova and the people in Cordova said they needed to have this freight in there on Friday. So we leave and try to get to Cordova in the morning, Friday morning. Then it goes on over to Valdez, and comes back to Cordova Friday night, and then goes on Seward. It gets into Seward then on Saturday, which gives it all day Sunday, well, the afternoon Saturday and all day Sunday then in Seward to do whatever, if there's any minor maintenance or anything. So it really only has about, the only thing you could do under that type of schedule is to just double back on back and forth on Friday, which that's never been the thing that school really needed. They want to go one direction on Friday and then the other direction on Sunday or something like that.
In other words, you're saying you can't fit that schedule in any way.
No, there's no way to take, say, a Friday through Sunday, 3 days or whatever, to take 3 days in Prince William Sound and still have 4.5 days, you know, which is needed out in Cordova, Homer, on that connection. We won't stretch quite that much.
Thank you.
Jim and Doug, we've been discussing the time the Bartlett would be gone from the 24th of October to the 3rd of January. I recognize what a gap that puts in the schedule that I'm looking at. However, the years past, the Marine Highway System has made a lot of alterations to their schedule to accommodate the schools. Would those accommodations still be in effect other than the portion of the time that the Bartlett would be in dry dock?
Well, it's here again, we're kind of pressed, you know, dollar-wise this year on the budget. And, you know, those trips are fairly expensive. Extra trips to run the Bartlett are fairly expensive in overtime, because the schedule on the Bartlett, why to be running it, and realizing there's probably a few passengers, but that's great. And we've tried to maintain our level of service up there in the Southwest without cutting back any of the what we normally have scheduled there. And so the only place we could realize some savings in personal services was eliminating any special trips that we previously had been able to accommodate, but it doesn't appear that our budget's going to allow it this year.
Jim, when you're speaking of budget, it was my understanding, and I could be corrected on this, that there was a 5% cut. Am I correct?
In personal services.
That cut was just in personal services?
Well, it's going. I think they're going to be. We're going to be able to spread it amongst the commodities. It was initially, I think, aimed strictly at personal services, and in trying to work up our budget, why our fuel savings is considerable too when we don't run a vessel during you know, a period of time. With fuel prices up there, I think they're reaching up above $1.10 a gallon, and so I think some of that. Otherwise, I don't know how we'd make it if we couldn't utilize the fuel service. But the Bartlett burns about 1,200 gallons per day that it operates.
Well, out of $2 million, you're looking at $100,000. Am I correct there?
For what? A cut?
A 5% cut of $2 million is $100,000. Is that right?
Well, it's a total. The total cut would have to have been on our total system, close to $1.5 million, And what I'm saying is we're trying to maintain the same service. We're cutting back southeast pretty severely to where we're not even having a Seattle ship a few months out of the year. And the only savings we're going to realize up there is the savings special trips, trying to maintain the schedule that we have put out every year and trying to maintain that same level of service.
What was the budget for the personal services, of which the 5% was cut from?
Well, I don't have the exact figure, but it was close to 30-some million dollars.
Just in personal
DOT
services?
DOT total.
Oh, DOT total?
Yeah.
For the total ferry system.
30 million. And 5% of turn of many is 1.5. Yeah. God, it seems like that ought to be able to be absorbed in there someplace.
One other question I wanted to ask you, Jim. I would like to, prior to asking that question, however, could you and Doug get these things that we're talking about in writing to me in Valdez at Box 775?
We're just finalizing the schedule that we're planning on. Now, there's one alternative, Betty, that if it worked out better for that area, for the Bartlett, would be to take it off in March and April. We'd leave it on until the Tusty came out, and then pull it off in March, April, and probably in part of May. But in the past, that has presented there's quite a buildup in traffic during that period of time in that area, because people are gearing up for the summer seasons and activities and construction, and that seemed to put quite a hardship on it. The one trip a week by the Tusty just wasn't able to supply the necessary service.
Now, would there be a way to evaluate that alternative, Jim, so that we can come up with some answers?
Well, the best way to evaluate it, because we did hear quite a bit from Cordova whenever the Bartlett was off during that period of time. I don't know how much Valdez is affected, but I know Cordova is quite severely affected. Because they don't have any road connection into Cordova, and they would talk into the city.
Yeah, I'm fully aware of that, and of course you're also aware of the fact that as chairman of the House Transportation, I don't represent just Valdez.
No, and I think that they would be in a much better position to evaluate just how necessary the increased service during those months would be versus the decrease in service during the November and December period.
Yeah. Okay. One thing that I have in my mind, Jim, was that I do know, my own personal experience of living there and teaching there, that there has been a great deal of cooperation between the truckers, the various people that utilize that with revenue cargo other than people. that the some of the changes that were able to be made to accommodate the schools did not discommode too severely those individuals. And what I was curious about was if we could come to some alternative that we didn't leave anybody high and dry.
That's, you know, that's the ideal situation that we would like to accomplish. The thing about the January and February, I think we're pretty well locked into that date for the Tustamina. We would have, if we move the Bartlett to later in the year, we have a couple small problems, but they could be overcome because one is a Coast Guard certificate. We would have to get part of the certificate renewed in Valdez, which we've done in the past, and that's primarily the life-saving portions of the certificate, and then get them to waive the dry docking until 3 or 4 or 5 months extension on the dry docking type work that has to be done. That's a minor. The big problem is the level of service to those communities that we're concerned, and we would like to do what's best for all the communities up there with what capacity and what scheduling we can maintain.
Well, we've posed you with quite a problem, I know. Would you look into the alternative, Jim?
Well,
and let us know what...
The alternative would be to move it down into that period of time.
Yeah.
And that could be accomplished. However, that then I know there'll be the same or very possibly the same problems that we will have being out there in November and December, and in many cases probably more severe.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering as to which alternative, or weigh the alternatives and see what we could come up with. There was one other question I'd like to ask you, and believe it or not, I had it written down before you mentioned Southeastern, and that is, I do know that Southeastern also accommodates the schools. Have you made any changes in that area?
We've had to take that same policy here. We used to schedule, especially the feeder vessels, for the various basketball tournaments in order to accommodate tournaments the best we could. But this year, we're not going to be able to do that. And we just won't have the vessels to do it with down here. We only have one feeder on the whole southeast for all the outports. Why, there isn't any time left on that vessel to do it. But both feeders on, while we're able to accommodate it a little bit. But we won't be able to schedule the extra trips down here, neither that we have in the past.
I did mention to Chuck Taylor when I talked to him on the telephone, and he had his list. I asked him if he wouldn't pick out one or two that were his top priorities, which, you know, were the larger number and the bigger tournaments, to pick those out. And if there's any slack at all, in other words, if there are some priorities there, it would be possible maybe to get the most important ones this type of thing. Rather, you know, if we couldn't do the whole list, maybe we could do the most important ones or something like that. He said that he was going to, he named a couple of them and then mentioned that he was going to do that. The one, and I think they were coming after this, right now I think they were in the January period, January and February period of time was when those big ones. But anyway, you know, that right now that we only have the schedule out in, through the end of December, and then come January, February, March period is going to be following here shortly. And so I asked him if he wouldn't do that for me, send me those priority ones.
Great, I'm sure he will. Are there any other questions that you... Oh, we thank you for your help, and hopefully we'll be able to work out something so that we can... I personally recognize the problems, but also recognize the fact that the ferry or marine highway system, whatever we want to call it. Sometimes we call it one the other.
We get to call a lot of names, Betty.
Yeah, how true. You know, I've been finding that out. I do, too, lately.
Them kids are going to have a new name for you.
And recognizing that, you know, that the effects and the numbers of people that affects and so on and so forth, which I'm sure you do too. And hopefully we'll be able to arrive at some compromise where we can accommodate the majority of things that are necessary and not...
As Doug indicated, if there are some, a basketball tournament in Cordova of some sort, where one weekend maybe we could, if it's during that period the Bartlett is operating, we could accommodate it. We have in the past tried to accommodate all the school functions up there during the time it's been running.
Right, and that's what I've been very cognizant of, and would hope that...
High priority time or weekend or something, I think we very possibly could accommodate it. I wouldn't commit myself now, but when he sends down his high priorities, we can sure take a hard look at that and try it, because it's a real service to the schools, and I realize this, that they're on limited budgets like everybody else.
Yeah. Well, I not only the service to schools, it's the ramifications to the people that live in interior and western Alaska who also participate in this. And I really hope that we'll be able to work something out. Is there anything else, Ed?
I have nothing further.
Well, thanks a lot, Jim, for being there. And we'll be keeping in touch, and I'm sure that Chuck Taylor will get in touch with you immediately.
I appreciate your call and your MMS, because we need the input.
Yeah. Would you also, you and Doug, try to get to me as soon as possible the whatever we can work out?
Well, if we get this down from Chuck, like I said, we could show you very shortly just exactly what the schedule on a week-by-week basis would be. But if there are some of these priorities, you better wait till we hear from Chuck and see what we can work into that. Now, I realize there'll be priorities for Cordova primarily, I would think, but whether that would also include those teams that are scheduled, from the interior and from Valdez coming to Cordova, as well as Cordova team going to some other areas.
Right, it certainly would, Jim, and because it'd be real difficult playing home games by themselves over there.
Yeah, a little difficult, yes. So I'm sure he'd probably come up with his highest priorities to see which ones we can accommodate.
Right. And again, thanks a lot, Jim. And we'll be keeping in touch, real close touch.
All right, fine.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Break.
Break.
Quarter to two.
Yeah, see, I got here 20 minutes after that. I went down, got a drink of water, and looked around. Got my batteries charged. Took two vitamins.
We're still on the morning agenda, but that's all right. This, as I said, this was a loose agenda. And,
where are we at on number three?
Yeah. And we won't be doing the fishing and overview.
Well, here it is.
And we're going to skip number six until tomorrow, and that will be under discussion of the committee goals. Or we'll probably may get to it sometime this afternoon, but I have a bombshell I need to drop that we didn't know anything about when we had this agenda. I would like Steve, see if you could make an arrangement to go to Providence Hospital for me and pick up a straitjacket.
Okay.
I think we're going to need it.
One or two.
Well,
maybe three.
Maybe two, because I know what this holds, but two of you don't, so.
Let's get on it.
But one definitely for Pappy. Although it may be anticlimactic, it may not even disturb you. Pappy, would you like to talk a little bit about the agriculture and... I think we could probably... I don't know whether you went to those railroad hearings in Fairbanks or not. I went to the ones here. But what I really wanted to have you talk about, and that is the, remember we were talking about the ag roads up in the agriculture area.
And
you have some new ideas on...
Well, I might mention the fact that we have not only just for the ag road problem, it ties in with the schools. If you don't mind, I'll kind of talk about that just a minute.
Right.
It ties in with the schools. We have one school district, for example, up there that travels some 1,200 miles per day. One school district on bus routes. That bus routing is...
Which school district is that, Patty?
That's Copper Valley. Copper Valley
Copper
School
Valley
District
REA.
Has 1,200 miles, 600 miles actually, and you travel it two ways per day that they travel. And they travel on some of the finest go trails and hogwaller roads that we have in the state. I had a letter here that I wanted to bring up, but I guess I can't find what in the heck I've done with it. Because it had to do with a letter I got from the Delta School District, and it kind of ties in with the same thing that I'm getting from some of the other school districts. It has to do with the problems school districts are having with added bus routes over roads that normally wouldn't... be driven on. We have, for example, in the Ag Project at Delta, we have two new bus routes that have just been added. The bus contractors are raising cane because they're concerned they will not have snow maintenance this winter. That means that children, we're looking at some maybe 50 miles extra, and this is in the Delta Greeley School District, 50 miles extra travel. Problem is maintenance. Whether or not the state's going to maintain them. They say they are, but they haven't in the past. There was $400,000 worth of maintenance money put into the area there for the maintenance of some of these side roads and things where these people live. But I haven't got a positive assurance from maintenance people up there out of the interior that they are going to maintain them. We got the road down at Broken Bridge, 91 mile on the toe cutoff. It has to be snow. It's a 4 mile deal round trip on it. It has to be kept out because otherwise we've got some kids that have to walk 2 miles to get to the main highway, and the temperature gets down to 50 and 60 below there, even though the temperature may be okay in Toke. In other words, you've got extreme cold, hazardous road conditions. The problem is with the school districts, it's going to cost them more money because of our roads. The agricultural roads have not been turned over, from what I can determine, in the Delta One project, for example, and they won't maintain them. So we've got to have roads maintained. We've got probably 100 people out in the area now that's working involved in the ag projects. The access roads to ag projects, the Delta Two project has got, and this is something I want to ask you, on, I guess in a way, is $2.5 million been appropriated for Delta II roads. Part of that money should, in my opinion, be applied to Delta I because Delta II is on the other side of the Delta I project. And the Delta I roads have got to be upgraded in order to get into Delta II. And I think maybe that legally we could use some of that $2.5 million to maintain the roads in Delta I. Out of that Delta II allocation. We've got in agriculture, we've got a problem in the actual movement of it. I think most of you are aware that I've been awful unhappy about the stopping of the construction on the Seward project and the North Pole project. The long range problem with that is that not just is the Delta project involved in it, but the Nanatoke-Jacket and the McKenzie Point project is involved, and it could create problems in the long haul. Agriculture products out of the Delta area going to Valdez, the cost of it is going to increase, I think, beyond the point where the farmers or anybody can make any money on it due to the fact that that road is just as bad as the road up from the Dolphin Highway. This is one of our problems in transporting Valdez. Now, Valdez, of course, is working on the storage facilities and the shipping facilities. That's going to be fine. But I don't know how in the hell we are going to travel some 560 miles round trip and move 30,000 tons of grain on the type of road we got on that Richardson Highway. You talk about tearing up trucks. I wish you could travel that one too, Mitch, because it would be a revelation to you. Betty's been on it, and she knows what I'm talking about. Hogan's Hill, that's about, well, from 129 mile to 186 mile is the so-called tow cutoff to Paxson situation. The worst stretch of the highway there that we'll be transporting agricultural products on is from 129 mile to about Hogan's Hill, which is about halfway to Paxson. That's the worst stretch of highway that we've got.
Excuse me for interjecting, Patty, but that doesn't have anything to do with the tow cutoff. That is the Richardson, is it not?
This is the Richardson we're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm referring this to the agricultural aspects of this thing.
Right.
One thing that I might point out, too, as far as our agriculture is concerned, we are actually a year ahead of schedule on the production of feed grains out of that Delta project there. We have now, and I don't know whether Steve had an opportunity to see it or not, to see one new, what I call a cotton cash money type crop coming out of the Delta project now, and that is grass seed. I was looking at one trailer load the other day that was worth over $200,000 that's just come out of that. They're starving for grass seed around the Pacific Rim countries and even in the lower 48. That, of course, would cut down the need for any large number of trucks traveling the highway, and that could very well be transported strictly by a truck. The Delta project is actually, as I said, about a year ahead of schedule, and that's part of the problems it's created for us in needing of storage facilities as part of the transportation system. I hope that we'll have a little better planning on the next go-around on it. One of the reasons I might try to, excuse me, go ahead.
I really don't see how you can put in, and maybe it's because I don't understand the question properly, how you can put storage and transportation in the same bag any more than you can put coal and railroad in the same bag. They're two different things, and yet they're contiguous upon each other. I think they're two separate things, storage or it's transportation to get the stuff to storage.
Okay, then.
But without one, you can't have the other either.
Well, maybe I better clarify this, why I say that grain storage facility is a key part of transportation. The farmer comes out of the field with a combine, truckload of stuff, he's empty the combine out, it goes to a truck.
That's where agriculture
is. You can't carry enough trucks down there to store it until they hit the main transportation corridors. You've got to have a collection point at both ends of your transportation corridors, transportation lines. That's why storage then becomes a critical part of these grain products and so forth. It's the same thing that you have on coal. Coal has to be dropped at a tipple or something before it can be loaded onto highway trucks, for example, or rail cars. You take Uses Valley coal mine, they've got trucks that they never let them run on the highways. But my God, they'll carry 15, 20 tons of coal at a time. But you can't put them on a highway. They got to go to a central collection point where they need to go on the rail or highway transportation. Consequently, my contention is that any type of facility that stores or holds this stuff until you're ready to move on the transportation corridors is part of the transportation system. And speaking of the coal deal, they've just finished up the core drilling on the Jarvis field there at Delta, which ties in with the railroad, too. They're starting to transport some coal by truck to Fairbanks out of that Jarvis Over Creek field. And there are 75 million tons of coal has already been identified in that field and it's close to surface. And give you an idea of the size, the amount of coal we're talking about. In all the years that Yusuf Valley Coal Mine has been in production, they've produced less than 20 million tons. And they've been at it, what, Betty, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And that coal production there. So you're looking at a good 40, 50 years worth of coal production there out of that Jarvis.
What grade?
Same as Healy. Healy Yusuf Valley. The same grade of coal. It's in the same structure, you might say, only it's on the other end of the range there where it's at. One other major transportation item I've got up there in that particular area, it's going to affect the railroad and the highways both and create another reason for the rail extension to the border, is the asbestos mine that's coming online between Chicken and Eagle. They've got probably 25 or 30 years production on that. They're working on a city up there now that'll hold anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 people. That brings the Taylor Highway into the forefront, because the Taylor Highway is a feeder highway, and that's going to give us a problem, because they're planning at present on trucking that concentrated ore from that mine to Fairbanks for the rail yard. And from there, I guess they're probably going to Seward for high sea shipment, wherever they're going with it. So the whole thing ties in that our road transportation, our railroad transportation in the eastern end of the state there is, we got a long way to go to get it in shape, but we got a hell of a lot of stuff to haul on. There's also an ore body between Delta and Tope. They've got some 1,600 mining claims, which is basically bornite, gold, lead, silver, zinc, and copper. It's quite similar to the big mining deposit that they have at Boronite up at the head end of the Kobuk River, where we need to get a transportation corridor from Prospect Creek west, Bettles, and on out across that way. But Anaconda, who has those claims, and also the ones at Boronite, it looks like they're going to try to do the Delta Tope area thing first, because they can at least get some access to transportation, if nothing else, highway transportation. These are some of the things in the future that we've got to consider as far as getting the road in condition, or either getting that rail extension down to the border. And I'm not even talking about connecting that railroad to anything in Canada.
May I inject something here? It just seems to me, it reminds me, what we're trying to do here reminds me of the guy that had a bad golf swing. And he goes to the pro and he says, straighten up my swing. And the pro says, well, now you got to take one foot and put it out here. You got to take your hand over here and you got to hold your head this way. And you got to get your knees bent. You got to do all of these things. Now, swing at the ball, the man can't even hit. He can't even come close to hitting the ball. What I'm really saying is that we're coming in with all these things, and yet comes to mind one thing that I think we ought to research, have done, and so we can handle it, so we know what we're talking about. Each one being a project, and yet being tied into all of it. In other words, Steve, you might be able to put your mind on it, and then Betty too.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose we had a large chart like this, the state, and then we had these Isinglass, does anyone know what Isinglass is anymore?
Transparent.
And we had these transparencies to overlay, and each one of them is laid out, showing the present existing rail system, just on rail, and another one, the same thing, on roads, into the areas that we want to open up these things. What are you smiling at?
I'm smiling because
because there's no long-range plan.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Now, in order for us to do the job, why can't we think along those lines? You brought up about five things, right, Zap, that have an integral tie-in to all of it. You can't go out and do one of them. You can't go do one of them over here because it has no beginning, it has no end. It seems like we've got to tie it in together. But this road goes up through to Healy, and this thing goes over to here, and this goes to Delta 1 and Delta 2, and bloom, bloom, bloom. So that when we're through with that on an overlay, we know exactly how the whole thing ties together on a thing that big, if you will. Something you could see. And I think we ought to start something like that immediately. Then we can identify the one thing in the Delta One. Where's the Delta One? Okay, you peel her back, and there's Delta One on an overlay of the existing. So we can see exactly where the hell we're going.
Mitch, except for procedure, you're talking about exactly what this committee's for and exactly what we're doing. We're identifying the resources and then attempting to establish the infrastructure to them. And your method on overlays is absolutely fantastic.
Why don't we get started on that?
Well, to some extent. I threw four or five things like this because you and I and Betty and Joyce, I think we're all thinking the same way, but the reason I threw all these things out at once is because it's exactly the thing I was going to bring up. I think that maybe this committee here has got an overview of something that maybe DOT doesn't even pay any attention to.
Well, I don't think they have plans.
Is the point, and this is why I was bringing up those school bus routes, ag access roads, ag feeder roads, ore feeder roads, railroad extensions. You've got ore bodies here, you've got schools here, you've got agriculture here, and you've got tourist travel. I hadn't even gotten to the Tok Cutoff, which was another part of the thing that I was going to talk about on tourist travel, which is another major industry. We're talking about two renewable industries, such as agriculture and our youth and education, that's tied into our highway and transportation system. We've got ore bodies. We've got in the form of asbestos. We've got ore bodies in the form of copper. We've got ore bodies in the form of coal, and it all ties into the economy. But the main thing about it is none of it going to do this state a damn bit of good unless we can get it to the market where it can be used. And just what you're saying is what I think, as Betty said, is the purpose of this committee, that we lay it out. Apparently DOT is so involved in just strictly the mechanics of a road or something, but we've got an overview here of the big picture, and maybe that's what this committee can come up with, some laying out some planning for the whole transportation, not only rails or highways, but your river transportation is another aspect of this thing.
It's all contiguous.
And it's all together, and I think this committee here could be one of the most responsible committees in the damn legislature as far as creating some income for this state and the future of this state right here in this one committee here. I think it's an extremely important committee.
Well, that's exactly what I think you remember mentioning the letter I wrote you what the goal of the committee was, and you're hitting the nail right on the head, and that is that what we need to do, and they have all been identified. All the resources have been identified, and now what we need to do is set in place, at least on paper, if not anything else, an infrastructure transportation that will bring the product to market. And all these other things that we're talking about all tie into that very thing, just exactly as you're saying.
How do we start?
Well, how we start is...
Get an illustrator, number one.
Earlier this interim, Betty asked me to take a trip up through... I went through the Delta Agricultural Project and went on up to Fairbanks to research this type of thing, what kind of materials were available from geological and geophysical surveys for mineral resources, just to get a good idea. And I found a lot of things that have been identified as far as mineral resources in the Kobuk area, outlining with maps plans for transportation, corridors that should be opened up, and things that should be taken a look at. The date on that is 1967. I looked back a little bit further in the Rasmussen Library, and I found this book entitled Multimodal Transportation Planning, dated 1964. I found many other things that have been done for years and years up until a point that started about the first part of the 70s.
The North Commission was another.
The North Commission.
What about the University of Alaska in Fairbanks? Have they got any more up-to-date stuff?
Okay.
DOT has commissioned four studies for the interior, south central, southeast. Anyway, four studies. And supposedly, they couldn't do any long-range planning until they got all of these studies in. And, of course, what Steve was saying is perfectly true. There was lots of planning done years ago for a transportation system. When DOT PF was established, they pitched out practically everything. And so they're at this process now. Now, the two of the studies, I think, are done. And so the others ought to be coming in pretty quick. And they, you know, the studies do identify these things. The problem has been, ever since they established the new transportation system, they used to have the five-year plans. They also had a long-range plan. Every state has to have a long-range plan. In Alaska, after establishment of the DOT, again, that part just went out. The thing that they are doing now, they have what they call put out these big books called five-year plan. It had all the projects in it that were to come on board in the next 5 years and when the years were and what sections of the road, pictures, the whole works. Okay, that came out in a large volume each year so the legislators could keep track of what was supposed to happen. Sometimes there were a lot of slippage, sometimes projects didn't get done, but basically you had a guideline and you could ask, what's happening with this project? It's right here in the book. What they have done in the last years is they decided that they'd go to a two-year plan. The two-year plan comes out in little form similar to that six-year there, supposedly. And the only person that gets any copy of that is the governor. There's nothing in law that says that the legislature has to get anything from them right now. So basically that's been eschewed by the very fact that for the last year, the legislature has pretty much determined what's going to be built where. Because of changing, you know, here's the governor's budget, and here's their priorities and so forth. I'm not saying that probably wasn't a better way to do it in a lot of ways. But what you basically have is a department that's not functioning. As far as long-range plans, we have the material is available of where the resources are. I'm sure that you've seen those great big huge books that were done. I see you're nodding your head. They have all the overlays of all the resources that are available in all the areas.
Where do we get this book?
Regional profile.
Regional profile. Yeah.
Is that the only one that has it?
Well, they should be available to you. I don't know how many more.
Where are they? Why don't we have one for this committee?
The resources.
I had all the
transportation so tight. The resources ain't gonna do you a damn bit of good unless your transportation is tied with it.
That's well, yeah, but when he was asking about the resources, yeah. Those regional profiles have every bit of material in them. In fact, if DOT had just drawn lines to different areas, that it might have helped. The railroad does not have specific corridors identified except those that were identified years ago by the North Commission and mm-hmm. some of the others. But basically, what you're dealing with is you're going to have to come up with some reason that the Department of Transportation has got to be responsible. It's got to be responsible to the legislature. The Department of Transportation. Because right now they're not. You can give oversight, but if they have no responsibilities...
What chances are we going to have to do that?
Well, this is what we're going to try to come up with. And Joyce will be talking about her contract pretty soon. And this is what we're going to try to come up with. Some legislation to make DOT... not only to split it wide open, but also to make it responsible to the legislature. Because inasmuch as we do control the purse strings, they should be responsible to us. Inasmuch as people do have capital projects, those projects should be coordinated so that it benefits the entire state rather than just parochial things. As you said, a road to nowhere. You didn't say those exact words, but start here and end here, and it's... There's no way to get to it or from it. And this is the purpose mission of the committee and the interim work to try to come up with legislation that we can do those things. At the present time now, in all honesty, to just be flat honest, Mr. Idy today could have told us to go whistle up a rope, because he is actually not responsible to us. However, because of the fact that we do control the purse strings, why, when we started asking for things in writing and then have to write them down, then he came up with an alternative. Bob Ward, and I realize I'm saying this on tape, but I haven't any compunction on it. The reason we're getting the responses from him that we are getting is the fact that they do not have any responsibility to the legislature. He doesn't have to listen to us on one thing, because all of his responsibility goes to the governor. See what I'm saying, Mitch?
Mm-hmm.
And however, when he does respond, it's because of the fact that if we could get everyone together, we could cut DOT off at the purse strings, and they could be sitting there with their two-year plan or their no planning or anything else, and not be able to do a thing about it.
But you got to substitute, though, if you're going to cut that off.
No, I'm not suggesting we do that. What I'm saying is that's the only reason he responds to us at the present time, is he's afraid we might cut some funds off. But he doesn't have any actual, doesn't have to be accountable to the legislature.
Well, then, is it unconstitutional for us to introduce legislation that makes them more accountable directly to the legislature?
No, and that's what I'm saying. That's one of the purposes of this committee.
Okay, now there's only one thing wrong with that, though, Betty, when you think about it. That is one department in state government. What's going to happen on CRA and health and social services and education and a few of those?
Maybe it has to be done in all of them.
How far do we go? Because we've got some problems in all these other areas the same way.
I'm fully aware of that. And very possibly that may be what might happen to everything. However, at the present time, it's this committee's responsibility
to work on one
to
department.
Work on transportation.
First thing we ought to do is split Dot Puff away from DOT.
Sentiments exactly. And I think those things are in the works. And as I say, those are the goals and things that we are going to discuss for this committee.
Just like I'd like to split agriculture and forestry away from resources.
And, well, that those things may happen. There isn't anything that's going to happen in this state that does not have to do with transportation. If we want to, and this has, of course, been the thing that's really shocked me no end, and you all know how hard Joyce fought to get that special committee on transportation last year. Then they made a standing committee of it. Why transportation wasn't a standing committee at the very inception of statehood, I'll never know. The rest of them were. And how they thought they were going to get from one place to another without any planning or organization. And very possibly just use Shank's mayor, I guess, to be responsible for it. It's beyond me why they hadn't had this committee for years. They don't have, so, as I said, we have a Pandora's box.
Well, there's one way to kind of split it off, is maybe some of the first legislation you need to consider is the splitting up of that monolithic thing again, right off the bat.
I very definitely think so. Go ahead, Joyce.
Would you like me to just go right ahead
yeah.
and tell them what
right.
I'm going to do rather than wait for it to be on the agenda, because I think I can answer some of Pappy's questions. As you know, with that special committee on roads and highways, all I did was find out everything that was wrong and got just that far. When Betty became chairman of transportation, at that time I put a proposal into her to do some work starting last February, I think. But the contract wasn't approved until I started working on it August 15th. Took a long time. I guess I should say thanks to the different structure. Anyway, the things that I proposed in, and I'm sure that Betty can get you a copy of my proposal to her, just for your own information.
Let me interject a minute. The reason I had not given you a copy of this contract prior to now was the fact that it hadn't been approved, and there wasn't any sense in passing out copies of something that hadn't been approved.
The main work that I'm going to be doing for the next 4 months that I've started working on, I've gathered the statutes from the different states, because after the audits came out, it was, you know, quite apparent that DOT is not functioning. The contracts don't go out. The monies are there. Well, they don't know where part of their monies are. But anyway, in other states, they very much are responsible to the legislature. They have to give their, you know, the long range plan goes to the legislature. Their 2 year, 1 year, whatever they're projecting, however that we set up, you know, their money, that comes to the legislature. The Senate Transportation Committee and the House Transportation Committee have to approve these in other states.
How many states?
Well, most of the states. I've got the statutes that I'm looking at are places that are similar to our situation. I'm looking at Washington, Montana, Idaho, Hawaii. I've got 8 states. And what I'm looking at is states that are similar with vast distances, that not Washington, but some of the others actually by law there are certain things they have to do.
Is Texas one of them?
No, I haven't got Texas statutes.
I would think that would be an appropriate one because of the size.
Yeah, what I was really trying to do was, you know, come up with so many to look at. But I will see if I can get Texas and
if it's appropriate.
Yeah.
They got big distances to run.
Yeah.
There's nothing in between.
And the thing that I'm finding is that we don't have things in our statutes that give DOT any direction. When you're talking about splitting it up, it's very apparent that public facilities needs to come out of DOT. Because one of the things that the audits really proved was the public facilities monies often are the monies that they take and use every place else. Again, there were 2 attorney generals giving 2 different opinions whether the funds were used illegally or not. So we have a statute that needs to be tightened up so that we can't get 2 different opinions. The audit said that they were using them illegally. The one attorney general said yes, and the other attorney general said no. So,
question on that, may I ask, in another state, I don't care which one, is there a commissioner as we have, or is there a authorities?
No. What there is a commission in most states. Most states have a commission that is made up of, well, some of them specify, some of them don't, but it's a so many people commission. This commission is the one that says, they're the first ones that say yay or nay on it, everything. In some states, they hire what they call the Secretary of Transportation, which would be like the commissioner here.
Who appoints? Is he appointed or elected or what?
Hired.
He's hired by the commission.
The commission.
The commission is made up of people appointed, but it's very specific. For instance, if we were going to do it for Alaska, you would have them appointed from the different districts. And probably you would have a couple of people on it that with an aeronautical background, just because of all the with some sort of knowledge of airports, because of we have more airports than we do than any state normally does. But this commission has the whole power to hire and fire. It also tells very plainly that they can't be just disappointed at the whim of a political figure. It's very specific how these people and why they can be replaced. So what you do, you have a commission that really is the oversight, and they meet in some states they meet 4 times a year, in some states they meet every month, and by and large all of the work goes to them. And what I'm seeing happening in Alaska, and especially now that there's so much money, is with no plan, with a department that pretty much, well, the planning people, they took all away all the power from design and construction, and they gave it to the planners. And this is nothing new I'm going to be telling you, because the audits reflect the fact that the planners can have any background. They don't have to have a transportation planning background. They can have any sort of degree. I'll give you an example of locally, a person that's now director of airports. There's no transportation background, no transportation planning background. She comes from the university and very limited experience along that way.
Who's that?
Kit Duke. Anyway, but after, you know, after seeing the whole thing, nothing is going to change unless you, you know, have the legislation. This committee or another committee can have overview and the last word on what gets funded and what doesn't get funded. But you'd have to work full time to try to keep up with what they're doing. It's an administration problem, but it hasn't been solved by the administration. Because generally these people are responsible. Why should you, for instance, go up and drive the haul road and find out that they don't have a crusher that's needed? That's what we are paying people. Very large salaries. They're supposed to know what's needed there and supposed to take care of that job. But this is part of what I'll be doing between now and December 15th. We're going to look at the administrative procedures as far as money goes. A lot of the states are so different than we are in the sense that their monies are all highway taxes. Since there will be, you know, lots of state funding completely without federal funds in this state, and I'm sure that's going to happen in the next years. So far, the projects are all going in via the Finance Committee. Very few public hearings on anything. A representative wants something in his area, and he gives a list, and it goes into the budget. Different legislatures, I'm sure, would work different ways in that sense. At the same time, if you have a transportation committee, and you have to have an appropriations bill before it goes to finance, this committee could then, for one thing, the commission would work with DOT. The long-range plan and the 1 or 2 year plan would have to go through this committee. Then also, there should be an appropriations bill for add-ons. And at that time, you would have a hearing, the same as other committees would have hearings on things.
Which is what we did, the way we did the committee last year, was when separate legislators put in bills, and when there were appropriation bills that dealt with transportation, they were assigned to transportation. And we voted in or out of committee, as you know. But it didn't deal with any responsibility on the part of DOT as far as the committee is concerned. They passed on the floor or whatever. Then the money was given to DOT.
To do as they wish.
And then the responsibility ends. Another thing that Joyce didn't mention that I have a very, very definite interest in, and she'll be working on this too, same as the committee will and staff will, and that is the lateral transfer of funds, which DOT has the power of right at the present time. Pappy can put an appropriation for the Nanatochaket for $20 million. the bill come into the committee, pass the committee, pass the floor of both houses, the money appropriated, and then to DOT. Then what happens is that if DOT makes the decision through their program and planning that this $20 million is necessary in the Natchitoches, it might get there. But if they decide that there's another road somewhere that needs that, they have the power to laterally pick up that $20 million and put it over here. And I can give you an excellent example of that on the Lackinac Bridge up at the McCarthy-Chittenden Road. Lackinac Bridge was appropriated for two years ago, I guess. I'm pretty sure it was 2 years ago. The funds were appropriated by the legislature. The funds were placed in DOT. Lackinac Bridge now sits down in Gastineau Channel. They laterally transfer the funds for Lackinac Bridge to the Juneau Douglas Bridge. As a result, we don't have a Lackinac Bridge. Plus, had those funds gone in DOT, DOT built the Lackinac Bridge, we wouldn't have the situations there right now where the water's washed the bridge out completely. And there's a big hole in the ground. And cars stranded on the other side.
I had a little piddling $80,000 gravel job that they transferred $30,000 off of. And I got $50,000 worth of gravel, but that was just about half of what we needed.
Yeah,
so
and
it went somewhere else.
What I'm saying there is that we have to have some contingency for them, yes, on overruns, shortfalls, so on and so forth. But not the full power of lateral transfer. And that's one thing we'll definitely be looking into and making some legislation for. So really what it boils down to, Mitch, is the fact that we are going to have to come up out of Joyce's contract and out of this committee is legislation so that DOT, and you notice I'm leaving PF off of there, because hopefully we're going to come up with some legislation that will split DOT and reorganize it also. But in order to come up with some legislation that will make DOT then responsible to the legislature, so that it can't get in the ungodly mess ever again that it's in right now.
What was the original background on incorporating PF into DOT?
I don't know the exact
history of that.
There
had to be some reasoning for it, Betty, and I'm just wondering if maybe we're creating a monster all over again that we had before and may not be aware of it.
No, Joyce could probably answer that.
Actually, when they decided to combine them, it was again looking at the multimodal, because under Public Works, we had the ferries, the ferries were with highways. Under Public Works, we had airports and buildings and things like this. So what they really, I think the effort was so that we would. There was a brilliant planner, the way the story was told to me, that came up with this concept. He was a creative genius, because he said, if you can plan and design for a highway, you can plan and design for anything else. So we're going to get a lot more use out of all these people.
They called it a consolidation.
And they called it a consolidation. And of course, it was supposed to save money. And of course, we now have 147 planners. The creative genius was Dick Holden. And I know I'm saying it on tape, but this is exactly the words that were used to me when I asked how it came about. But what we're finding is, again, it's created a monster that nobody has a handle on, including the commissioner. Another thing that we lost in that transaction was there's no regional powers. You don't have anybody in Anchorage or representing the South Central region that has any responsibility for seeing it done. Don't have anybody in Fairbanks. They pulled everybody out of Nome, tried to pull them out of Valdez. The planners are deciding what projects go. The planners do not talk to construction and design, nor maintenance and engineering. I mean, maintenance and operations.
Not at all.
Even the people that are located in an area, for instance, Fairbanks, they are in separate buildings and they don't talk to each other. Planners talk to Juneau. These people talk to Juneau. these people talk to Juneau. You can't run a Department of Transportation out of Juneau. Not, they've changed one thing. Now they're not sending all the contracts to Juneau. That's only because of the audits. But in regions, they're going to have to go back to regional authorities and somebody responsible. That also will be part of what we drop. And, you know, the public facilities, the buildings, they've put everything under it. And they literally will take from a school building, for instance. It can run from 14% to 35% for overhead, supposedly. Well, the reason that it runs so high is because they are very free right now. If they need a secretary in Juneau to take that money out of some school that hasn't been built and transfer the money in. That answered some of your questions.
Just stir up enough that, of course, fuel on the downside.
Right. Now, as long as we're where we are, let's go ahead and look at these papers that I gave you. I want to tell you a little bit about these and tell you what has happened, where I got them from, without mentioning a name, but tell you what it's all about. Like I said, this is where we're going to need the straitjacket for Pappy. Probably one for Mitch, too, I guess. Not me, because I did my top blowing before I got it. All right, what you have here is the planning for the South Central District as was given to the planner that lives in South Central and is attached to the South Central region. This was prior to the new organization of where they made three regional directors instead of five. Regional engineers, I don't know what they're calling them now. There's all kinds of different names, and I don't really know what they are. But we used to have five regions. They took South Central, split it halfway, gave half of it to Central, which is Anchorage, the other to Interior, which is Fairbanks. Well, this fellow decided he was going to resign. He had had it up to about here. So prior to his resignation, he went to Fairbanks and said, I want to show you what we've been doing, what our plans are, where we stand right now on this six-year project that we have. And the fellow from Fairbanks said, well, we're not using that. We are using this. And this is the new one that came out to us. What you need to do here, and we'll get to the last page in a minute, but for South Central, what has been done, and this is the interior plan for the years that are marked on this. What has been done is that Richardson Rehabilitation, 129 to 186, you can see the figures yourself. The Tok Highway, Richard Stabilization. You notice there, rehabilitation, stabilization. Rehabilitation means an overlay. Stabilization for $500,000, I'm not sure exactly what it means.
3R?
Is, yeah.
The 3R is repair. What is it? It's
reconstruction.
It's spot patching.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a right. redrive or something.
Yeah. And if you'll notice there, Whittier Access Engineering and Whittier Access Improvements have been put in the interior. Those are definitely central. They have no business there at all. The Glen Highway Nelchina Slide Repair is central.